In the afternoon, some of the girls went to a private shopping party at Let Claire, while Nick and I accompanied Stephanie and her mother to the Kremer Gallery. Nick knew of this antiques dealer and wanted to see it. He jokingly called it the billionaire's IKEA. But when we got there, I realized he wasn't kidding. It was a palatial mansion by the Parc Monceau, filled with the most astounding furniture and objets. Every piece was museum quality and seemed to have once been owned by a king or queen. Mrs. Shi, this mousy woman who until now hadn't joined in the fashion frenzy, suddenly transformed into one of those QVC shopping addicts and started buying up the place like a whirling dervish. Nick stood on the sidelines, chatting with Monsieur Cremer, and after a few minutes, the man ducked away. He soon returned bearing one of their historical ledgers, and much to Nick's delight, showed us some old receipts for purchases made by Nick's great-grandfather in the early 1900s. Friday, June 21. Guess who showed up in Paris today? Richie Yang. Obviously, he just couldn't bear to miss out on the action. He even tried to stay at the Shangri-La, but with all the suites booked by our party, he ended up making do with the penthouse at the Mandarin Oriental. He came by the Shangri-La bearing baskets of expensive-looking fruit from Edyard, all for Colette's mother. Meanwhile, Carlton conveniently announced that he was offered an incredible vintage sports car and had to go meet with the owner somewhere outside of Paris. I offered to accompany him, but he mumbled some quick excuses and rushed off alone. I'm not sure if I buy his excuses. It's so strange that he would run off like this. Why would he flee the match just as his chief competitor entered the ring? In the evening, Richie insisted on inviting everyone to the most exclusive restaurant in Paris. "You've practically got to kill someone to get a reservation," he said. The restaurant was inexplicably decorated like a corporate boardroom, and Richie arranged for all of us to have the chef's tasting menu. The amusements and tantalizations in 16 movements. Despite how unappetizing this sounded, the food turned out to be quite spectacular and inventive, especially the artichoke and white truffle soup and the razor clams in a sweet garlic sabayon. But I could see that Mrs. Bing and the aunties weren't half as thrilled. Colette's grandmother looked especially puzzled by the seafood raw-cooked in cold steam, the startlingly colored foams, and the artfully composed dwarf vegetables, and kept asking her daughter, "Why are they giving us all the vegetable scraps? Is it because we're Chinese?" Mrs. Bing replied, "No, everyone gets the same dishes. Look how many French people are eating here. This place must be very authentic." After the meal, the elders headed back to the hotel while Pipe Piper Richie announced that he was taking us to some ultra-exclusive club started by the director, David Lynch. "I've been a member since day one," he boasted. Nick and I begged off and took a lovely evening stroll along the Seine. Arriving back at the hotel, we passed Mrs. Bing, who was standing at the door of her suite, talking furtively to a Chinese maid from housekeeping. Catching my eye, she beckoned us over excitedly. "Rachel, Rachel, look what this nice maid gave me." In her hand was a white plastic trash bag filled with dozens of bottles of the hotel's Bulgari bath gel, shampoo, and conditioner.
"Do you want some? She can get more."
I told her that Nick and I used our own shampoos and didn't touch the hotel toiletries.
"Can I have yours then? And the shower caps too?" Mrs. Bing asked eagerly.
We gathered up all our toiletries and headed back to her suite. She came to the door and acted like a junkie who had just been handed free premium-grade heroin.
"Aya,
I should have been asking you to collect these bottles for me all week long."
"Wait a minute, don't go away."
She returned with a bag containing 5 plastic bottles of water.
"Here, take some water. We boil it fresh every day in the electric kettle, so we don't have to pay for the hotel's bottled water."
Nick was desperately trying to maintain a straight face when Grandma Bing came to the door and said,
"Lighty, why don't you invite them in?"
We entered her massive suite and discovered Auntie Pondy, Mrs. Shi, and Mrs. Wen huddled over a large portable hot pot in the dining room. On the floor was a huge Louis Vuitton trunk filled with packets of ramen in all kinds of flavors.
Shrimp and pork ramen?
Auntie Pandi asked, stirring a big batch of noodles with a pair of chopsticks. Mrs. Bing whispered conspiratorially,
Don't tell Colette, but we do this every night.
We're so much happier eating ramen than all this fancy French food.
Mrs. Wen said, Aya, I've had constipation every single day from all this cheese we've been forced to eat.
I asked them why they didn't just go downstairs to Shang Palace, the hotel's Michelin-starred Chinese restaurant, for dinner. Mrs. Shi, who earlier today bought an antique clock, an exceptional Louis XV long case clock by Jean-Pierre Lotz, almost identical to the one made for Frederick the Great of Prussia at Neues Palais in Potsdam. For 4.2 million euros at the Kremer Gallery, after looking at it for less than 3 minutes, exclaimed, We tried going there after that awful French dinner, but all the dishes were so expensive, we walked out. 25 euros for fried rice? 太烈人了!
Mandarin, for that's insane.
Saturday, June 22nd. Colette knocked on our door at the crack of dawn and woke us up. Had we seen Carlton? Had he called? Apparently he didn't return to the hotel last night and he wasn't answering his phone. Colette seemed worried, but Nick didn't think there was anything to worry about. He'll turn up. Sometimes it takes a while to negotiate with these car collectors. He's probably still in the middle of doing his deal. In the meantime, Richie invited everyone over to his penthouse suite for sunset cocktails on the roof terrace. A little party in Colette's honor, he called it. While the girls spent the afternoon getting spa treatments, Nick and I took a blissful nap on the grass at the Parc Monceau. In the early evening, we arrived to Richie's party at the Mandarin Oriental, only to find that the security men posted by the VIP elevator wouldn't let us through. Our names were apparently not on the list. After a phone call to Colette, we managed to clear things up and were whisked to the roof terrace, where we discovered that this wasn't just a little cocktail party for our group. The penthouse was packed with an extremely glam crowd and decorated like a high-tech product launch. Giant obelisk topiaries festooned with lights lined the parapet. An elaborate stage was set up on one end, and along one side of the terrace stood half a dozen celebrity chefs manning different food stations. I immediately felt underdressed in my cornflower blue silk shirt dress and strappy sandals, especially when guest of honor Colette made an entrance wearing the enormous canary diamond necklace her mother had just bought and a stunning black strapless Stéphane Roland gown with a long ruffled skirt that seemed to go on for miles and miles. Mrs. Bing, meanwhile, was virtually unrecognizable with her expertly painted face, her hair swept up into a beehive do, and the biggest set of sapphires set against a red Ellie Saab cocktail dress with a plunging neckline. But the biggest surprise of all? Carlton was there. He made no mention about being MIA for 24 hours and seemed his usual charming self. Turns out, he knew plenty of people at the party. Many friends from the London-Dubai-Shanghai party axis had flown in, and soon I was swept up in a frenzy of introductions. I met Sean and Anthony, two charming brothers who were DJing the party, an Arab prince Carlton knew from Stowe, some French countess who wouldn't stop telling me how disgusted she was with U.S. foreign policy, and then things really got crazy when some famous Chinese pop star showed up. Little did I realize the night was about to get a whole lot crazier. Chapter 17. The Mandarin Oriental, Paris, France. Nick climbed the steps to the uppermost deck of the roof terrace, trying to find a quiet spot away from the crowd below. He didn't particularly enjoy these raucous parties, and this affair seemed even more over the top than usual. Every squillionaire within private jet flying radius was here, and there were far too many outsized egos filling up the space. A carefully planted row of Italian cypresses started shaking fitfully behind him, and Nick could hear some guy moaning, Baby, 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 oh! He turned around discreetly to leave, but Richie suddenly ducked out from behind the trees, tucking a shirt back into his trousers, as a girl skulked off sheepishly in the other direction.
"Oh, it's you," Richie said unabashedly. "You having a good time?"
"The view's terrific," Nick said diplomatically.
"Isn't it?
If only these stupid Parisians would allow skyscrapers to be built in their city. The views would be unbelievable, and they'd make a killing selling them.
Hey, you never saw me up here, okay?"
"Of course."
"You didn't see that girl, okay?"
"What girl?"
Richie grinned. "You're A+ on my list now."
"Hey, I'm sorry for that mix-up downstairs, but I can see why my security wouldn't let you up.
No offense, but you don't exactly look like you're dressed for this crowd."
"My apologies. We were in a park all day and fell asleep. Rachel wanted to go back to the hotel to change, but I thought this party was just going to be drinks on a rooftop. If I knew you were going to be wearing a burgundy velvet smoking jacket, we would have dressed up."
"Rachel looks slamming. Girls can get away with anything. But we guys have to make more of an effort, don't we?"
"You can only get away with dressing this casually if you're flashing a billionaire wristband."
"What's that?"
Richie gestured to Nick's wrist.
"Your watch. I see you're wearing a new Patek."
"New? Actually, this watch was my grandfather's."
An exceedingly rare Patek Philippe 18K gold single-button chronograph with a vertically positioned register and sector dial. Reference 130. Manufactured in 1928, given to Nick by his grandmother when he turned 21.
"Nice. But you know, Pateks are basically considered middle-class watches these days. It wouldn't qualify as a billionaire wristband like mine."
"Here, check this out. My latest Richard Plumper Tourbillon,"
Richie said, thrusting his wrist within several millimeters of Nick's nose. "I'm a VIC, very important client, of Richard Plumper, and they let me buy it straight off the display at the Baselworld Watch Show. It's not even going to be available till October."
"Looks very impressive."
"This Plumper's got 77 complications, and it's made from a titanium and silicon compound that is spun in a centrifuge at such high speeds that it bonds on a molecular level."
"Wow.
I could be wearing a t-shirt and torn jeans with my balls hanging out, but still get into any of the hottest clubs or restaurants in the world, just by sporting this." "Every doorman and maitre d' is trained to spot a Richard Plumper from a mile away. And they all know it costs more than a yacht. That's what I mean by billionaire wristband. Heh heh."
"Tell me, how exactly do you read the time on that?"
"See those two little spokes with the green stars at the tips?"
Nick squinted his eyes.
"I think so. When those green stars align with those gears on the cable and pulley system, that's how you tell the hour and the minute. The gears are actually made out of unclassified experimental metals that are intended for the next generation of spy drones."
"You don't say."
"Yes. The entire watch is constructed to withstand forces up to 10,000 Gs. That's equivalent to being strapped to the outside of a rocket while it's breaking through the Earth's outer atmosphere."
"But if you were actually exposed to such forces, wouldn't you be dead?"
"Heh heh. Indeed. But just knowing your watch would survive makes it worth having a Plumper, doesn't it? Here, I'll let you try it on."
"I couldn't possibly."
Richie was momentarily distracted by a text message on his phone.
"Wow. Guess who just arrived? Mehmet Sabanche. That guy's family basically owns all of Greece."
Turkey, actually," Nick said almost reflexively.
"Oh, you've heard of him?"
"He's one of my best friends."
Richie looked momentarily shocked.
"He is? How in the world do you know him?"
"We were at Stowe together."
"You guys met at a ski resort?"
"Not Stowe, Vermont. Stowe. It's a school in England."
"Oh.
I went to Harvard Business School."
"Yes, you've mentioned that a number of times."
Just then, Mehmet stepped out of the elevator and onto the terrace. Looking down at the late arrival, Richie said excitedly,
Phew! Who is that spectacular babe he brought with him? Nick glanced down. My God, I don't believe it. On the main terrace, Carlton leaned against a railing alongside his Cambridge chum, Harry Wentworth Davies, surveying the scene.
You need to try these faux gras cronuts, Harry yelled into his ear. Better than crack cocaine.
And I couldn't believe that bloke on the telly who goes around the world terrorizing other people's restaurants served it to me.
This is how Richie draws his crowd. Heaps of pretentious food and pricey booze, Carlton said with barely veiled contempt.
Quite right. This Romanée Conti isn't shabby at all, Harry said, swirling his goblet.
It's a bit too obvious for me, but I will help to deplete as much of these reserves as I possibly can, Carlton said.
Not sure you want to get too sloshed tonight, mate, Harry cautioned.
Shouldn't you be in tip-top condition for the main event later?
Quite right. The smart thing to do would be to stop drinking now, wouldn't it?
Carlton deliberated before downing another glassful in several quick gulps. He scanned the crowd, recognizing most of Richie's cronies who had gathered here. It was a wonder Colette didn't suspect anything. He shouldn't have come tonight. Being here, seeing everyone trying way too hard to have fun, only made him angrier. And he could feel the blood pounding in his temples. 4 hours ago, he was in Antwerp, and he wished he'd stayed there, or continued on to Brussels, and caught the next flight back to Shanghai. Actually, what he really wanted to do was go to England, but Mr. Tin had advised him not to enter the UK for a few years. How did he ever fuck things up to this extent? To be banned from the one place where he felt like he could truly breathe.
Colette's looking rather spectacular, Harry said to Carlton,
eyeing her as she posed for a picture with Rachel by the pyramid of champagne glasses.
She always does.
That girl she's posing with looks rather like you.
That's my sister, Carlton replied.
Rachel was the reason he had come back today. Part of him resented her for it, but he found himself strangely protective of her at the same time. He just couldn't ditch her in Paris like that. It had been like this from the moment they met. He was all ready to hate her. This girl, who had come out of nowhere and set off an atomic bomb in the midst of his family. But she had turned out to be nothing like what he had expected. She was different from all the other women in his life. And Nick was one of the few guys he could actually stand being around. What was it, he wondered. Was it that Nick had also gone to Stowe? Or was it the way Nick didn't feel the need to vie for position with Richie, like all the other party parasites here tonight?
You never told me you had a sister,
Harry interrupted his thoughts again.
I do. She's quite a bit older, though.
You look like you could be twins. That's the trouble with you chinks. You never bloody age.
We don't for a while. But then there's a tipping point where we go from looking 20 one night to 200 the next morning.
Well, if they all look like your sister or Colette at first, sign me up.
Now tell me, what's the deal with you and Colette these days? 1 minute you're on, 1 minute you're off. I just can't keep track anymore.
I can't either,
Carlton said. He was so sick of the games Colette was playing. All week long, she had been dropping hints every time they passed by a jeweler. He knew that when he refused to go into Maubuisson with her on Tuesday, she had put Plan Richie into action and sent for him to come to Paris. She could be so fucking childish sometimes. As if having Richie here throwing her a party with his daddy's dirty money was going to make him jealous. Carlton felt Harry jabbing his ribs.
Hey, do you know that girl over there? White dress, 9 o'clock.
Harry, someday you're going to realize that not all Asians know each other.
You can't blame me for getting excited. That's quite possibly the fittest bird I've ever seen. I'm going in.
Race you there, Carlton said. If Colette wanted to play games, he could play too. He gave his jacket lapel a tug, grabbed two glasses of wine from a passing server, and strode confidently across the terrace toward the girl in white. Just as he got to her, Nick suddenly cut in front of him and, to his astonishment, wrapped her in a warm embrace.
Astrid, what the hell are you doing here? Nick said excitedly.
Nikki!
Astrid squealed.
But I thought you and Rachel were in China.
We were, but we flew to Paris on the spur of the moment with Rachel's brother and some new friends. Oh, speak of the devil. Here's Carlton. Carlton, this is my cousin Astrid from Singapore.
Pleasure to meet you. Astrid extended her hand to Carlton, who was completely stunned by the sudden turn of events. This extraordinary creature he was about to hit on was Nick's cousin?
And this is my great friend Mamet, Nick said, introducing Carlton.
You rascal, what are you doing hanging out with my cousin in Paris?
Mamet patted Nick on the back heartily.
It's a complete coincidence. I'm here on business, and we ran into each other at Le Voltaire.
I was sitting down at a lunch meeting, and who should come through the door but Charlotte Gainsbourg?
With Astrid.
Of course I had to say hello. I couldn't resist making all my associates sick with envy. Then Astrid invited me to dinner, and I talked her into making this pit stop.
By this point, Rachel and Colette had joined the group.
Astrid? Mamet?
This can't be happening, Rachel shrieked, hugging both of them in utter delight.
Colette was introduced all around, and she couldn't help but scrutinize every inch of Astrid. So this was the couture-wearing cousin that Rachel had told her about. Astrid's sexy gold sandals she recognized as being handmade in Capri by Da Costanzo. Her white patent leather clutch was vintage Courage. Her gold Etruscan-style cuff bracelet with the facing lion heads were La Alunis, but that little white pleated dress she just couldn't place. My God, it was perfection. The way the linen skimmed her body, just tight enough to drive all the men wild, but not so tight it looked vulgar. And those sundial pleats at the neckline, to accentuate the sensuality of the collarbone. Pure genius. She just had to know who designed it.
I am a fashion blogger. Would you mind if I took a picture of you? She asked.
Colette's being modest. She is the most popular fashion blogger in China, Nick bragged.
Of course, Astrid replied in surprise.
Roxanne!
Colette yelled. Her trusty assistant came running over and snapped a few pictures of Colette and Astrid posing together. Then Roxanne began to take notes as Colette quizzed Astrid on everything she was wearing.
Now I just need some caption info. I recognize your shoes and your handbag, of course. And the bracelets are Lalonis.
Actually, they're not, Astrid interrupted.
Oh, who did them?
They're Etruscan.
I know, but who designed them?
I have no idea. They were made in 6050 BC.
Colette stared in wonder at the museum artifacts dangling so casually on Astrid's wrists. Now she wanted some herself.
Okay then, most important. Tell me which genius designed your fabulous dress. It's Joseph Font, isn't it?
Oh, this? I bought it today at Zara.
For the rest of her life, Roxanne would never forget the look on Colette's face. A few hours later, Rachel and Nick found themselves having a late supper with Astrid and Mamet at Monsieur Bleu, the brasserie tucked away at the back of the Palais de Tokyo. As Rachel took the first bite of her sole meunier, she looked around the room, taking in the intriguing light fixtures, the marble-backed banquettes, and the shimmering bronze bas-reliefs.
Astrid, we've been eating at super fancy places all week, but this is by far my favorite meal. Thanks for bringing us here.
Mamet chimed in. I quite agree. There's something about this place that manages to be simple and yet envelopingly luxurious at the same time. It doesn't compete with the food but one does feel more special just being here.
Astrid smiled. I'm so happy you all like it. I wanted to come here because I'm thinking of commissioning the architect of this space, Joseph Durand, to build our next house. It's actually why I came to Paris.
I can't wait to see what he does for you, Mehmet said.
Didn't you just move into a new house last year? Nick asked. We did, but we're quickly outgrowing it. We almost bought a historic Frank Brewer house on Cluny Park Road, but it fell through at the last minute. So we've decided to build on a piece of land I have in Bukit Timah. Nick looked around the table and chuckled.
I still can't believe the four of us are here together. It's such a small world. And to think, I almost wanted to skip the party. But with my family doing business with the Yangs, I felt like I needed to show my face, Mehmet said.
I'm so glad we went, Astrid said. It was total serendipity. I'm just sorry your brother and his girlfriend couldn't join us.
I think Carlton wanted to, but he felt obligated to stay at the party with Colette. And she couldn't leave, being the guest of honor.
Colette's quite a character. I've never had someone want to know about every single thing I'm wearing. I was half afraid she was going to end up asking what brand of underwear I had on. She very well might have, if she hadn't been so shocked that you bought your dress at Zara, Rachel laughed. I don't know why anyone would be shocked by that. I buy clothes everywhere. Vintage shops, street vendors.
Colette and her friends live and breathe for high fashion. Frankly, I've hit my limit with them, Nick admitted.
It has been non-stop shopping since the minute we arrived. It was fascinating for the first couple of days, but then it just got tedious, Rachel explained. I don't want to complain, since Colette's been so generous with us, but I only came because I thought I'd get to spend more time with my brother.
Astrid leaned closer in. What's it been like getting to know your new family?
Quite frustrating, actually. I've only managed to see my father once since arriving in China.
Only once?
We can't quite figure out what's happening, but we think it has something to do with my father's wife. We haven't met her at all since setting foot in China. Rather odd, don't you think?
Maybe you should take a break from China and come down to Singapore for a week, Astrid suggested.
Nick's brow furrowed. It was already challenging enough getting Rachel through this trip with her family. He didn't want to complicate things any further by going to Singapore and facing all those minefields.
Where would he and Rachel even stay?
As if reading his mind, Astrid said, "You're welcome to stay with me. Cassian would be thrilled to see you, as I'm sure many others will," she couldn't help adding.
Nick went quiet for a few moments, and Rachel didn't know quite what to say.
"Or you two could always come back to Istanbul with me," Mehmet said, breaking the awkward silence.
"Oh, I would love to visit Istanbul," Rachel said.
"It's only 3 hours from Paris on my plane, and we're having the most glorious weather this summer," Mehmet said tantalizingly. "You should come too, Astrid. Come for a few days."
After dinner, the four of them strolled leisurely along the terrace steps of the Palais de Tokyo, leading up to Avenue de President Wilson. Rachel checked her phone and saw that Colette had left a number of text messages. 10:26 p.m., Saturday. Is Carlton with you at restaurant? 10:57 p.m., Saturday.
If Carlton calls you, please let me know.
11:19 p.m., Saturday.
Never mind. Found him.
11:47 p.m., Saturday.
Please call me, ASAP.
12:28 a.m., Sunday.
Urgent. Call me, please.
Rachel gasped upon reading the last message and immediately dialed Colette's cell number.
Hello,
a muffled-sounding voice answered.
Colette? It's Rachel. Is this Colette?
Rachel! Oh my God! Where have you been? Where are you?
What's wrong, Colette? What happened?
Rachel said, alarmed by Colette's near-hysterical tone.
It's Carlton,
You must help me. Please.
Chapter 18. The Shangri-La, Paris, France.
Oh, thank God you're here. Thank God.
Colette cried as she opened the door, letting Rachel, Nick, Astrid, and Mehmet into her sprawling duplex suite. Rachel gave her a concerned hug, and Colette immediately broke down in sobs against her shoulder.
Are you okay? Is Carlton okay?
Rachel asked, leading the suddenly fragile girl to the nearest sofa.
Where's everyone?
Nick asked, noticing that Colette was unusually sans entourage.
I told everyone I was exhausted and sent them to their rooms. I couldn't let them find out what was happening.
What is happening? Rachel asked.
Trying to compose herself, Colette said,
Oh, it's been terrible. Just terrible. After you guys left the party, this baby grand piano was wheeled out on the stage. Then John Major appeared and asked me to stand next to him while he serenaded me.
The former Prime Minister of Britain serenaded you?
Nick cut in, utterly bewildered.
I'm sorry. I mean John Legend.
I'm so relieved, Mehmet remarked dryly to Astrid.
So John began to sing All of Me, Colette continued tearfully. And at the end of the song, Richie got on stage, dropped to his knees dramatically, and asked me to marry him.
Rachel and Nick both gasped.
He ambushed me right in front of everyone. Apparently, my mother and the girls were in on this. That's why so many friends from China showed up at the party. I didn't know what to say. I just stood there and noticed Gordon Ramsay over by the carrot truffle fries, and all I could think was, what is Gordon going to think if I say no?
What did you do? Rachel asked.
I tried to laugh it off. I said, oh, come on, Richie. This is a prank, right? And Richie said, does this look like a prank? He takes a velvet box out of his pocket and thrusts his ring in my face. I'm looking at it. This 32-carat blue diamond from Repossi. And I'm thinking, as if I would ever wear a ring from Repossi. This man doesn't know me, and I'm not in love with him. So I said, I'm so honored, but you're going to have to give me time. Richie said, what do you mean, give you time? We've been dating exclusively for 3 years now. And I said, come on, we haven't exactly been exclusive. And all of a sudden, Richie's face got all twisted up and he began ranting, what the hell do you mean by that? You've strung me along for 3 years now. I'm sick of waiting and I'm sick of your games. Do you have any idea how much I've spent on tonight? Do you think John Legend flies to Paris for just anyone? Then suddenly, Carlton, who had been standing right in front of the stage, hollered, "Hundan!"
Mandarin for prick.
Can't you get the message? She's just not that into you. And before I knew what was happening, Richie screamed, "Non sabisulan!"
Shanghainese for bastard with shrunken testicles.
Leaped off the stage onto Carlton and started punching him in the face.
Jesus. Is Carlton okay?
Rachel asked.
He's a bit battered, but he's okay. Mario Batali, though.
What happened to Mario?
Astrid cut in, alarmed.
As Carlton and Richie were rolling on the ground trying to kill each other, my bodyguards tried to get in there and break it up, but it just made things worse. Because the four of them bashed into Mario's food station, and this vat of olive oil, where he was deep-frying the frito misto, got toppled over and burst into flames. The next thing you know, Mario's ponytail was on fire.
Oh, no! Poor Mario!
Astrid clasped her hands to her face in horror.
Thank God Mrs. She was standing nearby. She knew exactly what to do. She grabbed the can of baking soda and immediately emptied it onto Mario's head. She saved his life.
I'm so glad Mario's all right,
Astrid sighed in relief.
So what happened after that? Nick asked.
The fight pretty much ended the party. and I managed to drag Carlton back to the hotel, but as I was trying to help him clean up his wounds, we got into the biggest row we've ever had. Oh, Rachel. I know he was drunk, but he started spewing such hurtful things. He accused me of playing him against Richie. He said I had no one to blame for this whole fiasco but myself. And then he stormed out of the room.
Rachel thought her brother's accusations weren't actually that far off the mark, but she tried to be sympathetic.
You probably need to just let him cool down a bit. Things will be better by the morning. But we can't wait until morning. After Carlton left, I got a call from Honey Chai, the gossip columnist. She's in Shanghai, but she had already heard all about Richie and Carlton's fight. Then she told me something even more alarming. Apparently, several months ago, Richie challenged Carlton to a drag race, and it's happening tonight.
Drag race? You must be joking, Rachel said.
Do I look like I'm joking?
Colette frowned. Aren't they a little old for this? Rachel asked. Drag racing sounded so juvenile to her, like something out of Rebel Without a Cause.
Hiya, you don't understand. This isn't some kiddie race. They'll be driving these super fast cars through the streets at night, evading police all the way. It's going to be so dangerous. Honey Chai heard that Richie and Carlton are staking $10 million against each other, and people all over Asia are betting on this race. That's why so many of Richie's friends are here in Paris. Almost every guy I know is obsessed with racing these days.
Nick chimed in. Actually, I read an article about this in the paper. All these Chinese kids from rich families are taking part in illegal drag races around the world. Toronto, Hong Kong, Sydney, getting into huge wrecks and damaging millions of dollars in property along the way. Now I know why Carlton was doing so many test laps around the track at Bugatti the other day. Colette nodded grimly.
Yes. I thought he was just buying cars for a side business. But now we know the real reason. And he's been so emotionally erratic these past few days. The disappearing act, the drinking, the fighting. It's all because of this goddamn race. I feel so stupid. I should have seen this coming from a mile away.
Come on. None of us suspected either, Rachel said. Colette looked around the room uneasily, trying to decide how much of the story she wanted to tell.
You know, this isn't the first time Richie and Carlton have tried this. This happened before in London.
That's how Carlton got into that car wreck, wasn't it? Nick asked. Colette nodded sadly.
He was racing Richie down Sloane Street, and his car...
Her voice was suddenly cracking.
His car spun out of control and crashed into a building.
Wait a minute. I think I read about this. Wasn't it a Ferrari that smashed into the Jimmy Choo boutique? Astrid piped in.
That was it. But that's not the whole story. There were other passengers with Carlton. Two girls were inside the car. A British girl who will never walk again, and a Chinese girl who died. It was a horrible tragedy, all covered up by the boughs.
Rachel's face went pale. Carlton told you all this?
I was there, Rachel. I was in the other car, the Lamborghini that Richie was driving. The girl who died was a friend of mine who went to LSE.
Colette tearfully revealed. Everyone stared in shock at Colette. It's all beginning to make sense now, Nick said in a hushed tone, thinking back to what his mother had told him about the accident. Colette continued.
Carlton hasn't been the same since the crash. He's never been able to get over it. He blames himself and he blames Richie. I think he feels like he can somehow redeem himself by winning this race. But we can't let him get into any car tonight. He's in no condition, not physically and especially not mentally. Rachel,
Can you please talk some sense into him? I've been calling him nonstop, and of course he isn't picking up my calls. But I think he'll listen to you.
With the full gravity of the situation finally sinking in, Rachel picked up her phone and dialed Carlton's number.
It's gone straight to voicemail.
I was hoping he'd pick up if he saw your number.
Colette sighed.
We'll just have to go to him.
Where's this race taking place? Nick asked.
That's the thing. I have no idea. Everyone's just disappeared. Roxanne's off with my security team trying to track them down, but she hasn't had any luck so far.
Astrid suddenly spoke up. What's Carlton's phone number?
It's 86-135-8580-9999.
Taking out her phone, Astrid began dialing Charlie Wu's private line.
Hey, you. No, no, everything's fine, thank you. Hope you don't mind, but I have a big favor to ask. Does that security whiz still work for you?
She paused, lowering her voice. The one who tracked you-know-who down with just a mobile phone number a couple of years ago? Great. Could you help me track down the location of this phone?
No, really, I'm absolutely fine. I'm just trying to help some friends out.
I'll tell you the whole story later. A few minutes later, Astrid's phone buzzed back with a text message.
Found him, she said with a grin.
Right now, it looks like Carlton's at a commercial garage on Avenue de Malakoff, right next to Port Mayo. Paris, 2:45 a.m. Rachel, Nick, and Colette huddled in the back seat of the Range Rover as it sped toward Carlton's location. Sitting in silence, Rachel gazed out at the mostly empty boulevards of the 16th arrondissement. The street lamps illuminating the elegant facades with that particular golden hue only to be found in Paris. She thought about how best to handle Carlton in his current state and wondered whether they would even get to him in time. Suddenly, they had arrived at Avenue de Malakoff, and the chauffeur gestured toward the lone garage that seemed to be a hive of activity. Rachel stared in astonishment as the full extent of the race operation that had been months in the planning finally became clear to her. Through the partially raised garage door, a team of mechanics bustled around a carbon blue Bugatti Veyron Supersport, as if it were being prepared for the Formula One final, and several guys she recognized from the party stood outside the garage smoking. The Veyron, also proclaimed the fastest street-legal production car in the world, set a top speed of 267.856 miles per hour. Park one in your garage today for $2.7 million. Rachel whispered to Nick,
"Can you believe this? I had no idea it would be this much of a production."
"You've seen how the women in this crowd spend their money? This is how the guys spend it," Nick commented discreetly.
"Look, look, there's Carlton standing over there with Harry Wentworth Davies. Ugh, I should have known that wanker was part of all this," Colette said.
Rachel took a deep breath. "I think it's best that I try to talk to Carlton on my own. He might be more receptive if the three of us aren't ganging up on him."
"Yes, yes, we'll just stay in the car,"
Colette anxiously agreed. Rachel got out of the car and approached the garage, and Carlton suddenly looked up and noticed them. Grimacing, he staggered out to the middle of the street and blocked Rachel from coming any farther.
"You guys shouldn't be here. How did you even find me in the first place?"
"Does it really matter?"
Rachel said, studying her brother with concern. His left eye was blackened. He had a bruise on his jaw, a nasty cut on his bottom lip, and God knows what other injuries under his racing overalls. "Carlton, please don't go through with this. You know you're not in any condition to race tonight."
"I've sobered up. I know what I'm doing."
"Like hell you have," Rachel thought. Knowing it was useless arguing with someone who had clearly had too much to drink, she tried a different tactic.
Carlton, I know what happened tonight. I can totally understand your anger, I really can.
I don't know how you could possibly understand at all.
Rachel grasped his arm encouragingly.
Look, you have nothing to prove to Richie anymore. Can't you see that he's already lost? He's been totally humiliated by Colette. Can't you see how much she loves you? Be the bigger man and walk away from this race now.
Jerking his arm away, Carlton said gruffly,
"This isn't the time to big sister me. Just get out of here, please."
"Carlton, I know about London," Rachel said, looking him in the eyes. "Colette told me the whole story. I know what you're feeling."
Carlton looked taken aback for a moment, but then his eyes narrowed in anger.
"You think you know everything, don't you? You come to China for 2 weeks, and you think you're the expert on all of us. Well, you don't know a thing. You have no idea how I really feel. You have no clue how much trouble you've caused me, caused my family."
"What do you mean?"
Rachel looked at him in surprise.
"You don't even know the damage you've done to my father just by coming to China. Can't you get the hint that he's been avoiding you like the plague? Haven't you figured out why you're staying at the peninsula? It's because my mother would rather die than let you set foot in her house. Do you know I've been spending time with you just to piss her off? Why can't you mind your own business and leave us alone?"
His words hit her like a ton of bricks, and she took a few steps back, feeling momentarily winded. Colette sprang out of the car, stomped over to Carlton in her black and gold Walter Steger unicorn heels, and began yelling right in his face.
"How dare you talk like that to your sister? Do you know how lucky you are to have someone like her looking out for you? No, you don't. You take everyone for granted and only love feeling sorry for yourself. What happened in London was a tragedy, but it wasn't just your fault. It was my fault. It was Richie's fault. We were all to blame. Winning this race isn't going to bring anyone back from the dead, and it's not going to make you feel any better. But go ahead. Get into your car. Go and race Richie. The both of you can go measure your dicks and crash your million-dollar sports cars into the Arc de Triomphe for all I care."
Carlton stood stock still for a moment, not looking at either of them. Then he yelled,
"Fuck you! Fuck all of you!"
before heading back toward the garage. Colette threw up her hands in resignation and started to walk back to the SUV. Unexpectedly, Carlton sank down onto the curb, clasping his head as if it were about to explode. Rachel turned and looked at him for a moment. All of a sudden, he seemed like a lost little boy. She sat down on the curb next to him and put her hand on his back.
"Carlton, I'm sorry for causing your family so much pain. I had no idea about any of this. All I ever wanted was to get to know you, and to get to know your father and mother better. I won't go back to China if it's been that hurtful to you. I promise you I'll go straight home to New York. But please... please don't get in that car. I don't want to see you get hurt again. You're my brother, goddammit. You're the only brother I've got."
Carlton's eyes brimmed with tears, and bowing his head, he said in a muffled voice, "I'm sorry. I don't know what's come over me. I didn't mean to say those things."
"I know. I know,"
Rachel said softly as she patted his back. Seeing that things had calmed down, Colette approached the two of them gingerly.
"Carlton? I called off Richie's proposal. Will you please call off the stupid race?"
Carlton nodded wearily, and the women glanced at each other in relief. Part 3. Behind every fortune lies a great crime. Honoré de Balzac. Chapter 1. Shack O, Hong Kong.
Oh good, you're early,
Corinna said, as Kitty was shown outside to the table by the butler.
My God, the view! I don't even feel like I'm in Hong Kong anymore,
Kitty exclaimed, as she stared at the sparkling azure waters of the South China Sea from the dramatic cliffside terrace of the Koh Tang Villa at Shack O, a peninsula on the southern coast of Hong Kong Island.
Yes, that's what everyone always says,
Corinna nodded, glad to see that Kitty was duly impressed. She had arranged the lunch here today specifically because she knew she needed to do something special to make up for the whole Stratosphere Church debacle.
This is the most beautiful house I've ever been to in all of Hong Kong. Does your mother live here?
Kitty asked, taking her appointed seat beneath the arch at the outdoor dining table.
No, no one lives here full-time. This was originally my grandfather's weekend retreat, and when he died, he very cleverly left it to the Koh Tang Corporation, so that his children couldn't fight over it. It's shared among the whole family. We use it like our own private club, and the company also uses it for very special functions.
So this is where your mother hosted the ball for the Duchess of Oxbridge a few months ago?
Not just the Duchess. My mother threw a dinner party here for Princess Margaret when she came with Lord Snowden in 1966, and Princess Alexandra has visited too.
Where are those princesses from?
Corinna had to refrain from rolling her eyes. Princess Margaret is the youngest sister of Queen Elizabeth II. And Princess Alexandra of Kent is a cousin of the Queen.
Oh, I didn't realize there were so many princesses in England. I just thought there was Princess Diana and Princess Kate.
Actually, her name is Catherine, the Duchess of Cambridge, and she's not officially a princess of the blood royal. As consort to Prince Will... Oh, never mind, Corinna said dismissively. Now, Ada and Fiona will be here in a few minutes. Remember to be extra gracious to Fiona, because she was the one who convinced Ada to come today.
Why is Fiona Tung Cheng being so nice to me?
Kitty asked.
Well,
for one thing, unlike some of the members of Stratosphere, Fiona is a true Christian who believes in the power of redemption. And she's also my cousin, so I could twist her arm into helping me. Of course it doesn't hurt that Ada's been dying to see this house for years.
I don't blame her. I thought only Repulse Bay and Deepwater Bay had a few big mansions. I didn't know big houses on the water still existed in Hong Kong.
That's how we prefer it. Shack O is where all the old families have their houses tucked away on the secluded headlands.
I should get a place here, shouldn't I? You've been telling me to move out of Optus Towers. This would be like having a place in Hawaii.
Corinna gave her a patronizing smile. You can't just buy a house here, Kitty. First of all, there are only a handful of houses, and most have been in families for generations and will always remain that way. In the rare instance that a property does come on the market, new residents need to be approved by Shack O Development, which controls most of the land around here. Living here is like being accepted into a very exclusive club. In fact, I would say that Shack O homeowners are part of the most exclusive club in Hong Kong.
Well, can't you help me get in? Isn't that the whole point of our working together? And my paying you so goddamn much money every month,
Kitty thought. We'll see how things go. This is why it is so important to rehabilitate your image. In time, perhaps your grandchildren might be allowed to buy here. Kitty absorbed all this in a sulky silence.
My grandchildren? I want to live here now, when I can still sunbathe in the nude on a private terrace like this one.
Now, do you have the apology to Ada memorized by heart? Corinna asked.
I do. I was practicing it all morning with my maids,
They thought it was very convincing.
Good. I really want this to come from the heart, Kitty. You need to deliver it like this is your one and only chance to win an Oscar. I don't expect Ada and you to become instant best friends, but I do hope that this gesture will soften her and mark a turning point. Her forgiveness will go a long way toward your being accepted into society again.
I will try my best. I even wore exactly what you told me to.
Kitty sighed. She felt like a lamb being led to the slaughter in the muted floral Jenny Packham dress and peach Pringle cardigan that Corinna had chosen for her.
I'm glad you listened. Just do me a favor and button one more button on that cardigan. Now it's perfect. A few minutes later, the butler announced, Madame, Lady Poon and Mrs. Tong Cheng. The ladies stepped onto the terrace, Fiona giving polite air kisses to both Corinna and Kitty, while Ada barely looked in Kitty's direction and hugged Corinna extravagantly.
My goodness, Corinna, what a place!
It's just like the Hotel du Cap out here.
After the Niçoise salads had been served and a few pleasantries had been exchanged, Kitty took a deep breath and gazed earnestly at Ada.
Lady Poon, there's no easy way to say this, but I so regret what happened at the Pinnacle Ball. I haven't been able to forgive myself for my actions ever since. It was so terribly foolish of me to dash up on stage like that when Sir Francis was receiving his award, but you see, I was just so overcome with emotion. I have to tell you something that I've never told anyone before.
Kitty paused, looking the ladies in the eye one by one before she continued.
You see, when Sir Francis started talking about all those children in Africa that have been getting tuberculosis, I couldn't help but remember my own childhood. I know everyone thinks I am from Taiwan, but the truth is, I grew up in a tiny village in Qinghai, China. We were the poorest peasants. We didn't even have enough money to stay in the village. I lived in a little hut made out of metal and cardboard scraps beside the river with my grandmother. My grandmother raised me all by herself, you see, because my parents were working at a clothing factory in Guangzhou. We grew vegetables in the marshes by the river's edge. That's how we fed ourselves and earned a meager existence. But then when I was 12, my grandmother...
Kitty paused again, as tears welled up in her eyes.
My grandmother contracted TB and...
You don't have to continue, Fiona said softly, putting her hand on Kitty's shoulder.
No, I must,
Kitty said, shaking her head and swallowing back her tears.
Lady Poon, I want you to understand why I was so overcome that night when your husband started talking. My Nainai contracted tuberculosis, and I had to stop going to school to nurse her. For 3 months, I did this. Until she died. This is why I was so touched by your husband's efforts to combat TB in Africa. This is why I jumped on stage and wanted to write my $20 million check right there and then. I just felt so lucky that a girl like me, who grew up in a hut by the river, could now be in the position to help others with TB. I really had no idea what I was doing. I wasn't thinking. I never imagined how disrespectful it was. That was the last thing I wanted to do to your husband. Your husband is such a hero to me. And you, if you only knew how much I admire you. Everything you do for the people of Hong Kong, your work on behalf of breast cancer awareness, it's made me become aware of my breasts in a whole new way. And when I realized what I had done to offend you and offend all the Poons, my God, I just wanted to bury myself in shame.
Kitty said sadly, as she cast her eyes downward and shook violently with sobs.